Hi there, this is April Wallace. I'm the Associate Features Editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Whether your interest in true crime started with the hit podcast Serial, or maybe with something not based in truth like any number of TV shows, there's no denying that true crime interests a lot of people these days. One local event brings together those with an interest in the real-life stories of murder and more, with the law enforcement teams investigating it, as well as the victims' advocates who are aiding cold cases in hopes that they may one day be solved. True Crime Fest Northwest Arkansas will take place May 20th at the Rogers Convention Center. LaDonna Humphrey organized the event. She is also the founder of All the Lost Girls, a nonprofit that advocates to solve cold cases. LaDonna, thanks for being here with us today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So I'm wondering how did you get the idea for True Crime Fest and what made you want to build it?
So there's quite a few of us on the board of directors for All the Lost Girls. We're all involved in true crime in some aspect, whether authors or podcasters or advocates. And we've all been a part of other events, national events that are true crime related, like CrimeCon and events like that. And we got together and said, hey, you know, we would like to do something like this in Northwest Arkansas. There is not an event like that in Northwest Arkansas. And let's do it as a fundraiser for All the Lost Girls. Our case this year is the case, of course, of Melissa Witt. That's the reason we founded the agency. And that's really how this started. Hey, let's do something small in Northwest Arkansas as a fundraiser. And everybody was on board.
And so through All the Lost Girls, you essentially pick one case per year to help contribute to investigation. Is that right?
We do. We have a really specific goal with All the Lost Girls, and that really came from all the work that I've done over the past 8 years in the Witt case. So we specialize in strangulation cold cases. And so our goal there is to pick those cases, one or two a year, that we can contribute to financially to help with DNA testing and or promotion of the case so there's more awareness. And we decided that we would put everything towards the Witt case this first year, and the next year we'll go with some other cases. And, of course, you know, every nonprofit has to raise money, and so that's the reason why we were so interested in doing a true crime event in this area.
Okay. And something that you've told me in a previous conversation was that it can be hard to get to CrimeCon and those bigger events. And so what are some of your goals in that realm for this event?
And CrimeCon, you know, I'm a part of that, and I think it's a great event, but I think they would be the first to tell you that it is difficult to get to. You have to typically fly to that area and then pay for lodging. And then the tickets for this, you know, 2 or 3 day event can be a significant investment. And so our goal was to be able to provide something that's a little more central to Arkansas, Oklahoma, Missouri, and be able to offer an affordable experience. And it's not an event that's glorifying serial killers or glorifying murderers in any way. This is really focusing on victim advocacy and those people who are dedicating their lives, podcasters, authors, you know, law enforcement, all of the people who are contributing to help solve cold cases or to work current cases. And so that's our focus, is to show that not all true crime is bad. Sometimes there's a little bit of a stigma around it because of the people who are obsessed with serial killers. So we wanted to take a different approach and kind of show what our heart was and what our agency stood for. And that's kind of what it's grown out of, is just that desire to make a difference in this particular category, genre, so to speak.
And so by promoting these cases, you mean like reaching more people who might have information that they can contribute that could lead to the solving of a case or the finding of a missing person, something to that effect.
Absolutely. We have had a lot of experience with that in the Witt case, just in terms of the amount of media coverage we've been able to garner. We've put up billboards. We spend a lot of time giving interviews, those types of things. And we know the billboards and the social media campaigns work. And so that's really what our nonprofit is going to hinge on, because it's so important to get the word out. And, you know, promote does sound like a kind of a cringy word, I think, now that I've used it. But I think that that's what you have to do to get the word out and build the awareness so people know, hey, you've got this case that's in your own backyard that's not solved. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times people just don't know. And, you know, they have information that they didn't realize could be important. So that's our goal, is to just engage the community with our efforts.
Right. And it seems like the people that you've chosen to speak at these events are doing similar things. They're just doing them in different parts of the country. So I'd love to hear, you know, first of all, what can we expect during True Crime Fest? And who are we going to be seeing on stage or in Q&As or through virtual?
Well, I'm really excited about that part, because we have some of the most amazing advocates from all across the United States. We have Jennifer and Lance from Crawlspace Media, and I think most people will know Tim and Lance together separately as Crawlspace. And we're excited about that. They're launching a new podcast called Dark Valley. They're going to talk about that, and they're very victim-focused. We will have a virtual Q&A with Nick Edwards from True Crime Garage. He's a personal friend of mine, and he's also on the board for All the Lost Girls. I'm really excited about that. We have folks like George Jared. He's an Arkansas author and podcaster and just all-around amazing advocate. We have Catherine Townsend from Hell and Gone podcast, and I'm really excited that she's going to be participating. And we have tons of other local authors, state authors, and law enforcement agencies that are going to participate, including retired detectives from the Melissa Witt case, who are going to come and answer questions about her case and share with attendees what they're doing to solve that case. Mm-hmm.
And so you also have a headliner, is that right?
I know, I'm saving the best for last. That would be author James Renner. And in addition to being a personal friend of mine and on our board of directors, he is just an amazing author and just a true advocate. And I'm excited for people to get to meet him and hear what he has to say. And, you know, as he shares his experience with us about true crime writing, that's really what he's going to hit on. I think it's important to share that message, because I think sometimes it's easy to believe that writing about crime is super easy. You just Google the information. And I get that a lot as an author myself. And that's not really the case. It's an investment of your life into this case to be able to put those words on paper and to share it. And I think he's going to do a phenomenal job, and we're really proud that he's our headliner.
Very good. And so you've invested a lot of your life in writing for true crime yourself, and it goes way beyond the research, it seems like. So I'm interested in what that experience has been like for you. And I'd first have to say that you're the author of The Girl I Never Knew, a dual tale of true crime, the murder of Melissa Witt, along with your own involvement with the case, kind of in parallel. That book was published in April 2022, and its sequel was released that same year in the fall. And you can look for a third book, Connected by Fate. The third book in the series will be released this October. So what has that been like for you, coming up with this entire series based in the Melissa Witt case?
You know, initially, and I think I've shared this with you before, I had no intention of writing books. You know, I have a journalism background. I've been working on a documentary about the case. And then I always say, and then COVID. And, you know, I didn't want to be stagnant in the case. And so then I decided to write the book then. And it started out as one book, and now it's kind of morphed into a trilogy because there was so much to say. But you mentioned about, you know, the life investment. It's been a significant life investment for me. I mean, this is 8 years of me working the case. Sometimes it's like a full-time job. And so there's a lot of emotion that's involved for me because I really do want to see the case solved. And there's a lot of passion behind it. And, you know, the experience has been like a roller coaster. You've got really high highs and really low lows. And, you know, there are days that we think an arrest is imminent, and then you've got days that you feel like the case is never going to be solved. Mm. And it's personal to me at this point. And that's the reason why I've written the books. I'm not taking any proceeds from the books. We're putting that all back into her case. I think that's important for people to understand. Mm-hmm. And to understand that authors that have chosen to do what I'm doing and really kind of lock arms with investigators on one particular case, that is a huge commitment. And it's something that I take really seriously. And I hope that that's reflected in the books in two ways. One, respect for Melissa, and two, respect for law enforcement and the work that they are doing that will solve the case.
Right. Now, at the end of True Crime Fest is an extra special event to that effect. And I'd like you to tell us about that and all the work that's gone into that, if you can even sum it up at this point.
I'm really excited about that and very emotional that we're actually going to launch the documentary about Melissa. It's called Uneven Ground, The Melissa Witt Story. And it's an indie doc. It's something that I'm the executive producer for, and I've poured 8 years of my life in every aspect that you can imagine. Time and resources, emotion, passion, all the things. And I'm really, really excited to launch it this way. No better way than to share it with people who care about cases and share it in the Northwest Arkansas community. It's a little bit different than what I thought we were going to do with it in the beginning. You know, we've negotiated with lots of different networks, and we decided to stay true to our mission and our goal with Melissa's case. And so this is the way we're going to do it. And I'm really excited and a little nervous to get out of there as, you know, this debut documentary. But it comes from the heart. It came from a lot of people doing a lot of hard work. So I hope that it honors Melissa well, and I hope that it encourages people that has information, no matter how small, to come forward so they can see what a wonderful, amazing girl she was, and that they can find the courage to help bring closure to this case because she deserves justice.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us how to get tickets. And if you don't mind, you know, some price points, can you go to certain events, or do you do all day? What are our options?
Sure. So we've got several different options. You can buy all tickets at allthelostgirls.org, and you just click on the True Crime Fest link, and it'll take you right to ticket sales. There's two different ticket tracks this year. It's general admission, which is $75. You can come all day. You can come part of the day. But that's that ticket track. And then the second track would be our VIP ticket holders. And that is a little bit more of a price point. It's $125, but you get to come the night before for 2 hours on the 19th, and you get to meet all of the advocates you're going to be speaking. And you get to hear some private panels and some private experiences from folks like James Renner, you know, folks like George Jared, and other podcasters who are just getting started in the world of true crime. And I'm excited about that because that's important. And then for those that can't come during the day, but they really want to come out and support and watch the documentary, we have a $20 ticket for that. And you can come at the end of the evening and come join us watching this documentary that we're debuting. So
very nice.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be a great event.
And I feel like we can't say goodbye until you also tell us how we can contribute. If we know something about Melissa Witt's case, who should we contact and how?
So I always encourage people, first and foremost, if you know something about the Witt case, please call Fort Smith investigators. You can call the general number there in Fort Smith, and they will direct you to the detectives department. If you're a little bit more afraid of talking to law enforcement, and some people are, you can visit our website at whokilledmissywitt.com, and we offer a tip line that you can call, that you can be anonymous, and you can also use the contact form there. That does bleed into information that we give to law enforcement. It's not something that we keep, mm-hmm. but it gives a little bit of a buffer for people who might be scared that they didn't come forward. But I would just encourage people, I don't care how small the information is that you have, you could literally be holding the key that could solve a 30-year-old cold case. You know, please come forward.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for all of this, and I wish you the best with the first True Crime Fest.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Among the speakers you can hear at True Crime Fest is Nick Edwards. He's host of the True Crime Garage and author of The Delphi Murders, The Quest to Find the Man on the Bridge. Edwards is a board member for All the Lost Girls. He was also one of the founding board members for the Porchlight Project, an Ohio nonprofit organization formed to lend special help to cases of abduction and murder that have gone cold. I spoke with Nick by Zoom last week.
I'd love to learn about how you got interested in true crime to begin with.
So I am one half of True Crime Garage. My partner in crime, as I like to call him, the captain, he's the other half of True Crime Garage. We started True Crime Garage back in 2015, and we've been very lucky to be able to grow an audience since then. And we're kind of spreading our wings a little bit now that we've been around and on the block for a while, and I'm happy to doing a Q&A and virtually hanging out with a bunch of the guests at the True Crime Fest that's coming up in May.
So what was your audience like in the beginning, and how big is it now, and has it changed very much in those years?
Well, on the first show, it was me listening to the captain talk and him listening to me talk. And then over the years, we've been very lucky. We get almost 1 million downloads a week across the catalog. So we've done over 650 episodes. I believe we're coming up on 665 that will come out this week. And it's really quite amazing to me how quickly all of this is, the time has flown by, and the number of episodes. You know, we crank out usually two a week, and then we have our other show that's kind of on hiatus for now. It's called Off the Record, but we're working to bring it back, just trying to figure out what platform is best for the listeners. And it's been really an amazing ride, and there's been some things along the way that's really helped to promote our show. One of those would be CrimeCon. We've been to every CrimeCon so far, and I know the captain was able to make it out to CrimeCon UK last year, so that was really cool. I was hoping to be able to make it out there this year for CrimeCon UK, but it wasn't in the cards for this year. It's a little cumbersome to try to get a couple of Ohio boys all the way over to England. But I was very proud and honored that LaDonna and your team asked True Crime Garage to be involved with True Crime Fest this year. And we hope to be there in person possibly next year. But I'm very excited to be doing the Q&A with everybody in attendance, or as many people that care to look at me for a few minutes while I can field a few of their questions.
When you got started, did you know that it would grow to how it's become?
No. We thought nobody would want to listen to the two of us. And then we got like what we thought was a major compliment. So people must have been listening. We had no idea how to track that, which seems strange now because everybody tracks that and they're so concerned with that. We just didn't know how to do it. And I don't know how much of the analytics software was available at the time. But the compliment we received was somebody emailed in and said, "I love your show. It's like Wayne's World meets Dateline." And we were big fans of both. So we thought, wow, we must be doing something right. And then Rolling Stone magazine put us on some list of true crime podcasts that you have to check out and you have to listen to. And that was certainly a big pat on the back. So no, we really had no clue. We really just started this whole thing as an excuse for the two of us to hang out. Mm-hmm. And it's been amazing. You know, we did a handful of episodes, decided to release them to the world, and people started listening. And so here we are all of these years later. It's weird because we are coming up on 7.5 years. It's going to be 8 years that we've been pumping out shows later this year.
What has been one of your most popular episodes or something that you got a lot of feedback from in particular?
So one thing that, like I said, usually we do two episodes a week, and typically that means we're doing a real deep dive into a case, about an hour and a half, you know, 90 minutes to 2 hours long on a case. So we tend to be a little more detailed and a little more hyper-focused on some of these things than some of the other shows. But oftentimes we find, because we are doing two episodes a week, when we do a single episode, you know, we need to take a little moment every now and then and take a breath and do a single episode. Those ones hit real high for the download numbers. And some of the ones that we've done that have hit real big, of course, are some of the more popular cases, the more well-known infamous cases, the Alec Murdoch case, JonBenet. We did JonBenet Ramsey years ago, like six-parter on it. And originally we shied away from doing the JonBenet case because it was so big. It's such a huge case. It's so cumbersome. There's a lot of information on that case. The more famous a case is, as you know, the more information that seems to be out there. And so we covered that with a 6-part series. We certainly delivered our opinions on the case. That's a case that everybody has very strong opinions on, so they don't always want to hear yours if they don't completely jibe with what they're saying, right? But that's something that we did, and I was really proud of the way that series came out. And I think that it's one of those series that, even if you don't agree with some of our opinions, it's very in depth. It's 5.5-6 hours long to listen to it in its entirety. And so one thing that we've done since we actually put it out originally, we put it out at Christmas time last year, and that's something that we'll probably be doing in the future, because it gets such great feedback from the listeners, even after it, you know, now that it's on replay.
And I imagine some people might listen just to see if they do agree with you. Maybe that's part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I also think, the reverse is also true. You know, where you have some people that say, tell me something outside of the box, or tell me something that I may not have thought of, and let me ponder that thought for a little bit. And then there's other people that just want to have, they're happy to take issue with something that you said. And that's certainly awesome as well. I mean, these cases are unsolved for a reason, right? If they were so easily solved, then we wouldn't be sitting here talking about that. And most of the time, most weeks, we are featuring unsolved cases, because we're hoping that we're able to help in some way to keep media attention on some of these cases and crowdsource some of these lesser known cases, especially when you have things where there are visuals involved. And I know this is an audio platform, so the listeners won't get to hear this, but like for example, like this is a wanted poster right here of this man who killed two people. He shot at sheriff's deputies in Jefferson County in 2020. His name's Kevin Anderson. He's 6 foot tall, roughly 200 pounds. I bet you he's a lot thinner than that now, because he's been on the run for a while. Blue eyes, brown hair, extremely dangerous, as we said. But the U.S. Marshals know that this man killed two people in cold blood. And as said, he shot at sheriff's deputies when they arrived on the scene, not even knowing what's going on. So he's wanted for homicide and arson out of Jefferson County, both by the sheriff's department there and the U.S. Marshals. So this Kevin Anderson is a prime example of something we hope to do in some small way on True Crime Garage, and say to the public, hey, here's this picture of this guy that you may have never seen before. He could be anywhere, right? He could be standing on the corner in your town with a little sign that says, please help, homeless, please help. And you drove up and you handed him a dollar. You know, he could be anywhere, and he's wanted by the police for some pretty horrific crimes. So that's a prime example of something that we hope in some small way that our little garage show can help.
So do you get people contacting you saying I may have information about, you know, any of these cases?
Typically, yeah, because our audience is so large, it's not uncommon that we do receive tips. And that when that happens, usually it's typically within the first 2 weeks of us releasing a show about a case. And we kind of have to sort through those and try to decide what we think is best with the information that we're receiving. A lot of the times that information does make its way to law enforcement. What they do with it, we are not always told, and nor do we expect to be told. But again, we're trying to help, and we're trying to work with and have worked with actual law enforcement agencies across this great nation to feature some cases that they know need some either additional media attention or renewed media attention.
Mm-hmm. And when you decide what to do with it, is part of that just kind of judging whether you think it's a legitimate concern or?
Well, a prime example would be, and I won't get into specifics here, but sometimes people just care and they just want to try to help in any way that they can. Mm-hmm. So they may be reaching out, but they don't really have any information, or there's nothing that they are presenting to us that tells us that they have intimate knowledge of any of the players involved or the actual crime itself. We do get a lot of emails that say, "Hey, I'm from the area. I remember this. It breaks my heart." Mm-hmm. Something like that, we're not going to bother law enforcement with. But those are just good people. I mean, and that's what we're so honored and proud to have, so many good people listening to our show that do truly care about the victims and do truly care about keeping our cities and our towns safe.
Well, that brings me to a point that LaDonna mentioned about what she wanted True Crime Fest to be about, which is a place that does not glorify murderers or violence, but one that is sensitive to victims. And so I wondered how you approach that in your own work.
It can be a fine line, because you do have a community that is at times starved for information and details, especially on these lesser known cases. But it's to me, it's usually very obvious when something we say or could be saying would be degrading to the victims. And you know, that I hate to be Captain Obvious here, but there are so many victims in these cases. It's not just the person that was attacked or their life was taken. It's so many other people. It's their family. It's their extended family, their friends, their colleagues, the community. A lot of times the community in general is in pain and in need of healing after some of these. So it's, you know, you have to look at that and you have to go, I believe that when we put together our shows, the best thing to do is to, I almost picture the family members in the room, in the garage with us when we were recording the episodes. And knowing that, because we do have such a large audience, and knowing very early on when we started doing True Crime Garage, we started getting communications from victims' family members. And this was, again, back before we had any clue how many people were listening. Mm-hmm. And so that told us a couple things. One, people are listening, and two, this is hitting the ears of the family members as well. Mm-hmm. And that's something I don't think that we thought that would be the case back in 2015. I mean, podcasts were much different back then. We would tell people, you know, "Hey, we got this podcast that we do," and 9 out of 10 people would go, "Great, what's a podcast?" You know, so there was good reason to believe that a lot of people wouldn't listen and that victims' families wouldn't hear these cases. It's not changed anything that we've done, but it was something that we became aware of very quickly.
Okay. Well, you mentioned doing CrimeCon, and I'm sure that you've done many events. So I wondered what made you interested in True Crime Fest, Northwest Arkansas? What made you want to be a part of this one?
Well, I'm very happy and to be a part of a few different nonprofit organizations. The Porchlight Project is one that I've spent a lot of time with James Renner, who will be at Crime Fest there. And you know, that's another reason why I was really hoping to be able to get out there and attend in person, because there are so many people that are either presenting or they're a part of this great festival in some form or manner that I know, that I became friends with over the years. And so I was hoping to be able to see those people in person and catch up with them. I've known LaDonna for a long time and wrote the foreword to one of her books. I was very honored when she asked me to do that. And I've helped a little bit with the Lost Girls, which is something that I know is near and dear to LaDonna's heart and many other people's hearts. And I'm very happy to have been a part of that, as well as the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. So these are all fine organizations that people can donate time or money to, or you know, different types of resources to helping and advocate for these victims.
Okay. And you mentioned that for your part of it will be a Q&A style. Is that right?
I believe so. Yes. I what I'm hoping, I said, you know, could we do this in the late afternoon so that I can have a couple cold beers with some of the good people in attendance there. And if it's a Q&A, if they got questions, I'll have answers. Just looking to have a great conversation with anybody that's in attendance that wants to join me for a quick chat.
What are some of the common questions that you tend to get from listeners or people interested in the cases that you present?
Oftentimes the kind of cookie cutter questions are, how did you get into true crime? How did the show start up? Which makes total sense. I like when I get questions that are a little more case specific, because, you know, I got into this and started doing this because I am so intrigued by a lot of these unsolved cases, specifically Ohio cold cases, is something that fascinates me and always has for many years. So I like getting into talking about the actual cases and any questions that people may have come up with from listening to the show over the years. I will say it does get a little difficult though at times, having done over 650 episodes, and that means we've done over 300, maybe over 400 different cases. So it does get a little tricky when somebody asks something very specific. I like to think that I got a good mind and a good memory for it. So I'm hoping to field any of those questions and have some interesting conversations. And, you know, there's, even though we flap our gums on the show for 90 minutes to 2 hours every week, there's a lot of stuff that we leave out. And so I won't hit anybody with any information that we've left out by being hit with a broad question, like, you know, what's some information that you've left out. But if conversation leads its way to some of those details and information, I'm happy to share them in a more one-on-one type sitting.
I assume that some of that could be due to the nature of them being unsolved cases, that you can't share everything.
Yes. So sometimes it's, you know, for anybody that's out there listening, especially because we do talk to a lot of family members and we do talk to law enforcement, and you know, my word is gold. You know, I tell everybody, if I will give you a verbal handshake over the phone or over the computer right now, and if you tell me not to say something, I won't ever say it again, let alone on the show. So nothing like that is anything that I will be talking about. But there is information in some cases that we've learned well after the fact that might be of interest. And then there's some, you know, there's also some different avenues and different parts of these stories A lot of these stories are very big and cumbersome and large stories, and you just can't fit everything into the time slot every week.
And so if a listener or viewer asks something that crosses into that, you're easy to guide them that, like, I can't share and for this reason, but correct. For other things you can divulge more that you found out after the fact, basically.
Well, and I had a book come out too, The Delphi Murders, the quest to find the man on the bridge. And so if anybody wants to talk about that case specifically, one thing about the book is I talk about a bunch of other cases in there as well. And they're cases that were either rumored to be possibly connected to Delphi, or if there was something important that I thought we could learn from those cases, be it solved or unsolved, and apply it to the Delphi murders case, I included it in the book as well.
Okay. Well, that's most of what I was hoping to find out today. Was there anything else that you wanted to get to about your involvement in True Crime Fest?
No, I'm just excited to be a part of it and really honored that I was asked to be involved. And I'm really looking forward to hanging out with everybody.
Sounds great. And tell us where we can find your podcast and your book or books.
Okay, so True Crime Garage is the podcast. We're available on every platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the big ones, all the little ones. You can even find us, I believe, on Audible and SiriusXM. So if you have those apps as well, True Crime Garage, like I said, over 600 episodes available, free to listen to. So if you love it, good for you. You just found something to keep you busy for a very long period of time. And if you want to pick up my book, that would be great too. The Delphi Murders, The Quest to Find the Man on the Bridge. You can go to Amazon, or you can go to wildbluepress.com. And if you go to Amazon, you can search my name, Nick Edwards, N-I-C Edwards, and it will come up right away. Or you can search The Delphi Murders and sift through some of the search things that come up in your search there.
Okay, sounds good. Well, thank you so much for sharing all this. I really appreciate it and wish you the best of luck with the next fest.
Hey, thanks so much. Nice to talk with you.
You too.
Another speaker you can hear at True Crime Fest is Lance Riensterna. He is a producer, co-host, and cultivator at Crawl Space Media. He also created and co-hosted another popular true crime podcast, Missing Mara Murray, which focused on a single case. Crawl Space Media spans many cases and subjects. Lance is also a board member and advocate for private investigations for the missing. I also spoke with Lance by Zoom last week.
Thank you both. I'd love to start with a little about you guys and Crawl Space Media. So if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself and kind of what you do.
Cool. Sure. Yeah. Well, I will let Jen start because ladies first.
Oh, thank you. My name is Jennifer Mel. I'm a producer and director of development with Crawl Space Media. And we produce a series of shows. One of them is Missing. The other is Crawl Space. And we've got a new show coming out in June called Dark Valley.
And I am Lance Riensterna, and I am one of the founders and producer hosts of Crawl Space. You know, the company is Crawl Space Media. We do, like I just said, Crawl Space, the show, Missing. Been acting as a producer on Dark Valley, associate producer on Dark Valley. Yeah, we can say, well, I mean, it's the company's show, so we can even go so far as to say executive producer, I suppose. But so Crawl Space Media has been around since 2015. We started doing one particular podcast about a missing young woman from New Hampshire, and that sort of spun off and ballooned into in a way that we didn't expect, and we were able to start covering other cold cases, other types of crimes, and we gathered interviews with experts in the field, journalists, psychologists, and that show is Crawl Space. So while we were just covering one specific missing individual, we wanted to branch out and kind of explore the world of true crime a little bit more in depth. So that's how Crawl Space came about, and then we just decided to start the company, Crawl Space Media. We had a lot of colleagues in this industry doing pretty much what we were doing, and we all sort of banded up and acted as a way, acted as a support group for each other, so we could all co-elevate in this industry that was getting more and more saturated by the day. So that's how we met Jen. She was an avid fan of the show, the biggest fan ever of the show, and she had done a lot of work on this other cold case about a woman in. Well, it's not really your hometown, but the town that you were living in, Suitcase Jane Doe. And it was the story about a woman who was half of her was discovered in a suitcase. And the other half was like the torso part was discovered in the suitcase, right? Torso to the head. And then the other part was discovered in a park. But Jen had put together a lot of information on that. She'd done a lot of her own investigation into that. And she brought that to us and said, would you guys want to cover this? And it just ended up turning into like a multi-part series on Crawl Space where Jen would join us. And she had a lot of footage, like documentary footage about her, her journey trying to figure out who Suitcase Jane Doe is. And then we were just like, well, might as well. We were trying to develop into a bigger company, you know, to do more projects, do more documentary work, more podcasts. And that's just how she came aboard as far as like a from a development perspective.
That case in 2015, was that your first experience with true crime?
Oh, no. My first like real experience in true crime was I guess it's sort of like a dual story. The first time I got involved with anything true crime was when I found a book about this murder that took place in my hometown of Jaffrey, New Hampshire in 1918. It was the Dean murder, and it's still unsolved to this day. And I found a book on my family's bookshelf that was my grandmother's, and it was written in 1923. And I read it. I was like, I don't know, 12 or 13 years old. I read it, and it was all about the Dean murder that took place in Jaffrey, New Hampshire. This guy was a farmer, a gentleman farmer, which means he wasn't a real farmer. He just kind of he had a family stipend and everything. And he would milk his cows and do his farm work at noon and midnight instead of like early in the morning and in the mid evening. And one night when he went out to milk his cows, he was murdered by probably two or three people, and they found his body the next day in his well, in his cistern on the property. So this book was written by a war correspondent who came in and took all of the documents, all the grand jury testimony, and put it together, all the articles, put it together and made this book. And that's what really fascinated me about. That was the first thing that really fascinated me about true crime. And it was like a mile away from where I grew up. And the other thing that happened was this another unsolved murder in 1987 of Craig Lane in Peterborough, New Hampshire, who was 17 years old, and he was working at this like island style gas station in Peterborough, New Hampshire. And this person came in at night and attempted to rob him. There was a fight. He was stabbed several times and he ended up dying. And that was the first time I saw like a composite sketch in my hometown. So they had the composite sketch of the person who killed him everywhere in town. And it just like terrified me because it was like the classic emotionless, like featureless, but still like terrifying image of this person who killed Craig Lane. And that crime has still been yet to that's still unsolved as well. So that's like sort of the genesis of my true crime experience.
It sounds like both of you kind of stemmed your interest in the subject from cases that were nearby. I can see that being like a way to work through what's happened in your area, whether it happened a long time ago or recently. Is that part of the fascination with trying to help solve cases for you or put things together?
I think for me, yeah, having... I have a background in journalism and documentary filmmaking and stuff. So I was, you know, kind of avidly searching for an interesting story to report on. And I think the mystery is what draws you in first. And then you begin to care about the people involved, the victim, him or herself, the family members, and the community itself. So it kind of branches from mystery to kind of advocacy, I guess, and compassion.
Yeah, for sure. Jen has a background, like she said, in journalism. I don't have a background in journalism. And our other partner, Tim Poliri, who wasn't able to make this call. So there's three of us in this company, Tim, Jen, and myself. None of us have background in being in law enforcement. We're not like investigators professionally. So it's never really occurred to us to like solve something. I think that's kind of a misconception from people who look at true crime creators that the intent is to solve. Maybe some people's intent is to solve, but going off of what Jen just said, you know, you start to understand that the compassion and empathy part is a lot more important than, for whatever it's worth, solving something. Once you start working with families and working with secondary victims and even having them on an episode and they get to talk about the person that is missing or the person who, you know, the victim of this homicide or domestic abuse, once they start talking about it, you can tell that that helps them. So it you really start to recognize the more you interact with these people, how important that is. And then it's just kind of a community that's unlike any other community. And when Tim and I started doing the first podcast, we were introduced to this community and we were just like, this is incredible. Like on one end, it's like really, really close knit and supportive. And then there's this other end of the spectrum that is like kind of like out there the intent is really good. The people there, they have their best intentions, but they're a little bit misguided in their approach, meaning like you shouldn't just call up the father of a missing young woman and say I can solve this crime. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't be so combative when you have a theory and somebody challenges your theory with some other theory. And so there's this whole spectrum that was really fascinating to us. But ultimately, again, going back to what Jen said, it's just kind of about the compassion and the empathy for the secondary victims.
I think that is a really important piece. Other speakers have said something to that effect. And I know that LaDonna kind of is organizing this based on you all having that similar element that you do care for the people left behind. So I think she kind of shows you with that in mind, it sounds like.
Oh,
good.
It's good to know.
Certainly isn't because of the money.
Well, what made you decide to do True Crime Fest in WA?
Do you mind, Jen? Bye.
No, go ahead. Take it.
Okay. Well, we had been kind of orbiting each other's circles, LaDonna and us here at Crawl Space, whether we were kind of bumping into each other at Crime Con or seeing some social media interaction here and there. And she had written she's written a couple of books about the death fetish community, about Melissa Witt. And we had her on the show and she discussed that. And after that interview, I remember thinking, she's not just somebody who's writing a book about a crime to sell copies of the book. She's trying to like she's doing it for a purpose. Like there was a lot of deeper intent there. And she's very proactive about it. And if I was somebody who was like responsible for committing a crime and LaDonna Humphrey was writing a book on me, I'd probably be like, this isn't good, because she doesn't seem like the type of person who's going to stop. And then we had her on with Alicia Lockhart, who they teamed up for the Strangled book. Was it Strangled or was it?
Yes.
Strangled was okay. Yeah. Sorry. So they teamed up for, what was that?
And now there's a third in the series.
Right. The third's coming up. Okay. And seeing the two of them together, seeing LaDonna and Alicia together, talking about their mission
expose.
What?
Expose, maybe?
Yes. Thank you. See, you should have answered this. Seeing LaDonna and Alicia together, and seeing that they had this mission to expose the death fetish community, and then all of the connections that indirectly kind of lead back to Melissa Witt, and then hearing about Alicia's experience with an individual who violated her in this community, and instead of becoming somebody who wasn't going to not have a voice, instead of just being quiet about it, she joined LaDonna, and the two of them are actually doing what true crime advocates should be doing in this space, which is being proactive. And if it means sinking a bunch of time, energy, money, sweat, blood, and tears into a true crime festival, an independently run festival, amazing. Like, it's putting a spotlight on all of this. And I just liked how like fearless both of them were. They just knew that this was what they wanted to do. And they just kind of, and they do it with this like really good attitude. Weirdly enough, they do it with this, I don't know. It's just, they have a good attitude about it. They don't sound like they're just hell bent on revenge or anything. You know what I mean? It's like, they're very strategic about it, and they bring in the right people to help them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And just to piggyback shortly on what Lance said, we really appreciated the spirit in which LaDonna approached this subject matter. And I think one of the goals or aims we have with our new project, Dark Valley, is a very victim-focused sort of show. So we thought that joining with LaDonna and giving a preview of Dark Valley at her festival would kind of like be in line with that same spirit.
Okay. What do you have planned for the fest? Is your portion speaking on stage, or are you doing like a Q&A, or what do you have in mind?
Do you want me to take this last? Yeah. Drinking water. So as I mentioned, we're there to promote and preview our investigative series called Dark Valley. We also are teaming up to kind of interview LaDonna and Alicia on stage about the death fetish community and their work there.
And I'm sure both of those will turn into a Q&A at the tail end of each one.
Probably.
And what do you hope that people will get out of the experience of, you know, you interviewing them about that community?
Well, I mean, when we interviewed them on the show, my brain was going to a live presentation without knowing about the True Crime Fest at the time. As we were talking to them just on a Zoom interview, I just felt like this, their passion and energy would translate well to a live crowd. And then when the True Crime Fest became an opportunity, Jen and I talked about it, like, if we had time, would we want to do this? And of course, we had time to do it. So we asked, and she said yes. And I think, like, it's inspirational for people who are advocates and true crime fans, or that's their passion, to see these two people on stage putting out that like positive energy, even though something really dark and kind of tragic has happened, and they're talking about a very dark subject matter. But that translates so well. I just feel like it's a good, I don't know, representation of what the festival should be, the fest should be.
Kind of like they're giving hope or optimism for, I don't know, some, not necessarily solutions exactly, but, you know, just some changes, I guess.
I'm sure it'll also be incredibly informative to the audience too, about this like little known community out there, and maybe some like maybe a didactic approach to women keeping themselves safe from harm within this community. What markers are like, what kind of red flags to watch out for if you're being groomed for such a thing, what to do if you accidentally are in it, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, I think we've reached the end of my questions. Is there anything that we didn't get to that you wanted to make sure I knew about your part of the fest?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both for joining me. I really appreciate it. And nice talking to you. And good luck at the fest, of course.
Thank you.
Thank Pleasure you so to meet much. You.
Again, this is April Wallace. I hope you enjoyed today's interviews. Find tickets to the event, True Crime Fest, on May 20th at allthelostgirls.org.